That was easy, well.
Legislative update.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We provide to the board today a report about legislation that has possible impact on CSERA that actually passed and was enacted and will become effective January 1st, 2016. The agenda packet does have a memo from me summarizing the legislation. We start with AB 663. That's a Ventura County bill, and that will allow the Ventura County Board of Supervisors to appoint an alternate trustee to their retirement board who would vote in the event that one of the board appointees is absent, much like our alternate appointee trustee. And so Ventura becomes the second after Contra Costa to have that additional alternate trustee.
It came up at SAC that Jerry was doing such a fine job that.
Yes.
Jerry brought that up.
I did. Ventura, thanks you.
Moving on to AB 992, that is a clarification in the law in the CERL regarding disability retirement, and that is that if someone applies for a disability and is granted, while a disability application is pending, is granted a service retirement, at that point they select options, but then once the disability, if the disability is granted, then the system must allow them the opportunity to revisit the options they selected. This is something that CSERA already does, so it's not going to be a change to our practice, but it is a clarification in the law that was sponsored by SACRS. Next, we have AB 1291. This is a Ventura County bill, and that creates a the retirement district is essentially going to be a district, and it's another one of those independence bills. Ventura is going to be the fourth county, SACRS County, to become independent from the their county. And in this bill, they actually isolated five positions, and those five positions would become retirement system employees as opposed to county employees, and the remainder of the retirement system employees still are continue to be county employees.
I had a chance, excuse me for just, if I can, I had a chance to talk to someone from Ventura about this, and unlike the support that we were grateful to have from organized labor in Contra Costa County, labor was opposed to this for their rank and file, which is why this is applies to only five individuals. Interesting.
SB 21 is a change regarding the obligation to report gifts of travel, and it requires nonprofit organizations that provide gifts of travel to elected officials to disclose the names of donors who funded those gifts, and the elected officials who receive the gifts now have to disclose the destination of donated travel.
Another benefit of being appointed.
About transparency.
Yes, this only applies to elected trustees. SB
222. Sorry. I'm sorry.
You blushing?
I have sleep deprived. Go ahead.
So just a question on that. So does that mean that if CSERA pays for travel to a conference for an elected trustee, that they'll have to disclose it?
No, this is geared more towards, for example, if a labor union pays for someone's travel and they're an elected official, elected trustee, then the trustee has to disclose the destination and the labor union would have to disclose the donor.
If SACRS were to sponsor a trip by Gabe, would that have to be reported?
I'm not sure if SACRS qualifies as a nonprofit organization, yeah. And I'm not sure that they would.
We're the nonprofit, but the sponsor would be SACRS.
He would be doing that not as a trustee, but as a officer of SACRS.
SACRS,
but
yeah.
He's still an elected official.
Yeah, but that's how you got on
SACRS. SACRS doesn't do it that, so I think we're okay.
They don't pay any expenses.
Not that I've ever heard of.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think we're okay. Good question. Mm-hmm.
SB 222, that is a general obligation bond bill that creates a statutory lien for any bonds that are issued after January 1, 2016. There's an automatic statutory lien. The governing board of the issuing body doesn't have to take any steps to perfect the lien or anything like that. It is an automatic lien. The reason it's here is because it would impact Cicero to the extent that the county or any other participating districts, and they're all special districts, to the extent that they issue a general obligation bond going forward, that bond would have this automatic statutory lien.
I was going to say, Harvey had a lengthy comment on this that Sackers in the legal side. It probably makes sense to have you summarize that.
Well, we had a conversation with Sackers. Not only here have we experienced districts, plan sponsors that get into fiscal difficulty, and then it's sort of a race to see who gets paid, but it's happening elsewhere too. Other systems are experiencing plan sponsors who don't want to pay or can't pay what's due to them. You know, in the Stockton bankruptcy, CalPERS was essentially untouched. They were reinstated essentially at the expense of the unsecured creditors, who were paid a 1 cent on the dollar on their claims. What this bill would do would be to change that playing field substantially. This would give the holders of general obligation bonds issued by an agency a statutory priority over pension obligations if it came to bankruptcy or insolvency. And so it's something that, you know, I keep on my radar because I'm always worried about those plan sponsors that get into financial trouble and suddenly can't pay their bills, but they're paying others. This was really sponsored it was funded, I think, substantially by the credit rating agencies who wanted something in California law that gave bondholders, for whom they do the ratings for bond issuances, shores up their relative rights vis-a-vis other unsecured creditors. When you think about it from the point of view of a district or a participating plan sponsor, ultimately we're just an unsecured creditor. We don't hold collateral. We don't have a lien on their building. If they get into financial trouble, we stand in line with everyone else. And so far it hasn't happened in any of the bankruptcies. Because they've all been negotiated. Detroit, for example, negotiated with its pension obligations. But it's something that went under the radar, went through with no comment, no analysis by anyone. Started out as a bill relating only to school districts, and then got expanded to all local agencies. So there it is, just a marker in the future, puts us a little more at risk for recovering unfunded liabilities that are owed by a plan sponsor in fiscal distress.
So is the default of a plan sponsor a risk that we can insure against? I'm not advocating it, I'm just asking.
Well, ultimately, yeah, you can insure against anything, okay? And you know, somebody will write you a policy for that. It is something you could insure against. It's not likely. I've never seen it happen. But ultimately, the county is your insurance policy, because ultimately the county is obligated for the unfunded liability in the system.
And so we will just stop all services
and we
and
thank,
just
and
pay
we,
pensions.
And we thank you for that.
That's all we can do.
So the county may be interested in whether it can buy insurance for the default of.
Yeah. I'm sure AIG offers that and many other fine products that the government will back.
So. Invesco will arrange that for us. Yes.
How would this have impacted the Stockton case if this was the law at the time?
It would not have specifically impacted the bondholders in Stockton because they were not general obligation bondholders. They had secured liens on real estate, golf courses and buildings and things in Stockton. It's just that the value, their lien was $36 million and the value of the property was $4 million. So they were secured for $4 million and unsecured, just an unsecured creditor for $32 million. So they, if had they been a general obligation bondholder, this would have changed the, you know, if they had been totally unsecured and just had GOBs, then that would have changed substantially. PERS could not have gotten paid its unfunded liability in advance of a general obligation bondholder that would have this law.
So were there any unsecured general obligation bonds in Stockton? And if so, would they have gotten paid for anything else?
They were... I don't remember if there was a class. All the other bondholders got paid.
But this would
they
be
weren't that. There weren't. It wasn't that much.
Okay.
Relative, the ones that got 1 cent on the dollar was Franklin Templeton that had two big loans.
Again, they were secured. By
and they, in theory, they were secured.
So how's this going to impact borrowing?
This helps with agencies in the bond market.
Okay.
You know, because Moody's would now look at this and say, well, now you're a secured creditor, not an unsecured creditor, so we're going to give you a AAA on that.
Got it.
You know, so it's a statutory priority that didn't exist before. So it really strengthens, it should help the borrowing costs of local agencies. That's a good news.
The last portion of the description here, in the bondholders would have an automatic statutory lien on bond revenues. Is that just kind of, that's not language from the section.
I'm not sure if that's in it. It's basically on the tax revenues that are designed to repay the bonds.
So that means they'd get it from the county tax collector's office directly if
yeah.
they had to.
Yeah.
Before it went to the pension system.
Doesn't say bond revenues. Kind of a shorthand.
The revenues received pursuant to the.
Yeah, the revenues received pursuant to the bond. So, in other words, let's take a district that has a general assessment bond, for example. The tax that comes into the treasurer's office, that those assessment proceeds, this would give them a lien on those assessment proceeds where they didn't have that lien before. Had the money come in on that assessment into the treasurer's office and a district filed bankruptcy at that point, that money could be used to pay anything and everything. Now that money has to be held for the purpose of paying back the general obligation bonds.
I mean, maybe I'm misunderstanding, but general obligation bonds are basically bonds that aren't attached to a particular asset. They aren't attached to a revenue stream from
Correct.
Like a toll bridge or something like that.
Exactly.
It's simply an obligation of the issuing party. And so this allows for an automatic attachment to any revenues that come to that issuing party?
The revenues.
When you issue even a general obligation bond.
Excuse me.
They earmark, they don't secure, but they earmark certain revenue streams that will be used to repay those bonds. But that's like saying we're going to repay a loan to the bank out of our cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
There's no specific segregation or lien on specific dollars. This gives a specific lien to the bondholders on those dollars.
So the next session, the legislature needs to allow for retirement districts or associations to also have this same status.
Well, I mean, that's the fight. In theory, we have that under the 37 Act now. You know, if we don't get paid, we have a claim against any monies that are available. But
the monies that would be available are going to be after this leaned these money. Amounts are taken care of.
Yeah.
How does this affect payroll? Payroll that's owed. My understanding is that's like first in line. If you file for bankruptcy, you've got to pay your payroll obligation.
Yeah, under Chapter 9, the operating expenses would continue to come out of available revenues. Usually there's a stipulation with your secured creditors to use their cash collateral, this cash, to pay your operating expenses to stay in business. So it would be freed up to pay necessary payroll to run a city or district or something like that. But the lien would still exist on that in future revenue streams. So it just changes a level playing field, or a playing field where we thought we had an advantage under law. Now we, against general obligation creditors, we no longer have an advantage. They have an advantage.
So the issue, this doesn't decide the issue whether or not, okay, there's not enough assets to go around if everything were to be liquidated, but it doesn't address the issue as to whether or not obligations to a retirement system by a plan sponsor can be discharged in bankruptcy.
Right. Or impaired in
or
bankruptcy.
Impaired.
Yeah. More than you ever wanted to know.
Right.
Interesting, actually.
Karen, you want to continue?
Yes. The next bill we have is SB 272, and that's in addition to the Public Records Act. And it creates an obligation on the part of all local agencies, all agencies actually, including CSERA, as a public agency, to create a catalog of enterprise systems, and those are data systems containing information collected regarding the public. Make that hard copy of the catalog available on request through the agency's website, and yearly the entity has to update and maintain that catalog to make sure that it is up to date. The implementation date on this is July 1st, 2016. Any questions on this one?
It talks about information collected regarding the public. Is the information on our system?
What that is.
Yeah.
and so we would have to review all of our databases and see what information we have there and if it fits within this category. There's going to be some questions about is it regarding the public or not. We'll have to deal with those and then publish a catalog that is that complies with this bill.
So at this point, we don't know how much work might be required of our staff under this bill. It's still a evaluation discovery process on our
yes.
part.
Okay. An analysis of the systems that we do have and comparing those to the requirements in the bill.
Do you have any idea why this bill came about? I mean, it's weird. It's not asking for a list of the information that you have. It's only asking for a list of the electronic or data collection systems that you have.
And there's particular information that they would like to have on there that you're required to have on there, like the name of the vendor, how often the database gets updated. I'm not sure what's behind this.
Yeah.
SB 704, that's in addition regarding conflict of interest, and it adds another situation that would qualify as a remote interest, and that is when a person who's an owner or partner of a firm serving on an advisory board or commission to the contracting agency, they would have a remote interest in a contract that the agency contemplates so long as they recuse themselves from providing any advice to the contracting agency regarding the contract, and refrain from participating in reviewing the project that results from that contract. And doing a little bit of reading on this, I found out that this is really geared towards situations where there's an architectural firm that provides architectural services, and a partner or owner serves on an advisory board of, say, city council, for example, who's contemplating a contract. So this would allow the advisory board to continue to have this person on the board and enter into the contract, but that particular board member would have to recuse themselves from the process, essentially, and that would qualify as a remote interest, meaning that the city would still be able to enter into the contract.
So this actually loosens up the conflict of interest.
Yes.
Where previously, in your situation, the city council wouldn't be able to consider that vendor at all.
Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any questions on the legislative update?
That was pretty good.
All I have.
That's thank all you. That the thank legislature you. Did, all of that yelling and screaming and stomping and money flying around.
Mm-hmm.